My name is Jonathan Todres. I'm at Georgia State University College of Law. I want to talk to you today about human trafficking and the role of public health. In some senses, I feel like this is, for me, an atypical crowd to speak to. I typically talk to law audiences or human rights audiences who know very little about public health methodologies. So in some respects, I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir, but what I hope to get out of this in part is that I want to generate some interest in the field of public health in the issue of human trafficking. There are very few people in public health today that are working on this issue, and there's a real role to be played by public health professionals. So no disclosures other than to say that what you're about to see are a very mundane set of slides. I guess that's my disclosure. I'm constantly battling PowerPoint in principle, and then in the context of human trafficking, I struggle with what's the right photo to put in a PowerPoint slide and how not to essentialize survivors, so I go without photos. Most of you, no doubt, have heard about human trafficking or at least seen it in the news. It is mentioned in presidential speeches. It's now on the agendas of heads of state, so it has become and often is referred to as one of the pressing issues of our time. I've been working on human trafficking-related issues since the late 1990s, about 1996, and that predates most federal all federal legislation other than sort of really old federal legislation that was used by analogy. And a lot has changed in this time. So we've seen major federal legislation, international treaties on human trafficking. We've seen literally thousands of organizations who, in the late 1990s, either didn't exist or didn't do anything related to human trafficking now refer to themselves as anti-trafficking organizations. Yet, despite all that work and significant resources, I would argue that we've seen little and perhaps even no evidence that the prevalence of human trafficking has declined at all. So my research, which focuses on prevention, asks why is that the case. I want to briefly outline the issues. For those who aren't familiar, I'm just going to do a nutshell sort of what is human trafficking and then talk about the current framework and then what public health might bring to the table. So human trafficking involves three components, an act, means, and purpose. The act, it can be a range of things, recruiting, transportation, transfer, harboring, receipt of persons, anything along that sort of process. The means is typically some means of force, fraud, or coercion. The exception being with children. You don't need to establish force, fraud, or coercion when you're dealing with children. And then the purpose is for some form of exploitation. So what you typically see most often in the news is stories related to sex trafficking, so trafficking into the sex industry. But labor trafficking is an equally significant problem, if not a greater problem, and you see individuals trafficked into agricultural sector, sweatshops, construction, mining, hair salons, I could go on and on, golf courses, and so on and so forth. So it's really pretty pervasive at this point, and not just a sort of beyond the U.S. problem, but a problem here in San Francisco, in my hometown of Atlanta, Georgia, and pretty much there have been human trafficking cases in every state in the U.S. and the District of Columbia. In terms of the magnitude of the problem and the consequences, the magnitude is hard to conceptualize. You see ranges anywhere in the tens of thousands to the millions. We don't have good research, and I'll talk about that, but I think most people working in this area would agree that it is a significant sort of population-level issue. The consequences are sometimes life-threatening and often very extreme. One study on women trafficked in Europe found that 95% had experienced physical or sexual violence. 71% of them had experienced both. That's not uncommon. The studies that you're seeing are 79%, and all these, the vast majority are experiencing significant harms in the labor trafficking context, but also in sex trafficking, you're seeing workplace hazards, environmental hazards, health hazards, and so on and so forth. So in terms of the current legal framework and the current policy framework, I'm not going to go into detail. The Trafficking Victims Protection Act is the cornerstone of U.S. federal legislation on trafficking. And the U.N. Trafficking Protocol, which is the protocol to prevent, suppress, and punish trafficking in persons, especially women and children, supplementing the U.N. Convention Against Transnational Organized Crime, that's why I just put the Trafficking Protocol up there, is probably the cornerstone of the international response. And then there's also the optional protocol to the Convention on the Rights of the Child on the Sale of Children. And that's important because the U.S. is a party and is currently reporting for a second time to the Committee on the Rights of the Child, and I can talk more about that in the Q&A. All of these legal frameworks adopt a three-pronged approach to human trafficking, and that is that states are required to criminalize and prosecute acts of trafficking. They should protect and assist victims or survivors, and then third, adopt prevention programs. I think one of the reasons, you know, we haven't, as I said at the outset, we have little evidence that there's been any real progress. Part of that's because we have no real baseline data. But part of it, I think, has to do with the framework. To date, what we've seen is the vast majority of resources have focused on the criminalization and prosecution of cases. There has been an increase in the last half dozen years on assistance to victims. Almost nothing still on prevention. So what we've set up in the last decade plus is really an endless cycle, that we are going to be chasing perpetrators and trying to pick up the pieces and help survivors after the harm has occurred. We're doing very little before the harm actually occurs. So I know the folks in the world of public health are familiar with moving upstream, but that's really where I'm focused on my research and trying to get people to think about. So the current framework is really a criminal law-centric framework. What's wrong with that? It fails to address the scope of the harm. As I said at the outset, the range of physical violence, sexual violence, environmental hazards, criminal law is just not set up to address really any of that. And we shouldn't expect it to do so. The second piece of the scope of the harm that I think is worth noting is, if I don't know if there's anyone in here who does administrative law, but there's some literature in administrative law that I think is relevant, multiple goals theory, which says essentially that entities faced with competing goals will over time default to their primary mandate. So what we've seen in the last sort of half dozen years is individuals, scholars, practitioners recognizing that we have a criminal law-centric approach to human trafficking, and what we really need is a victim-centered approach. A victim-centered model. And so there's a push to get law enforcement to be more victim-centered. What we learned from multiple goals theory is that simply won't work over time. I've yet to meet any law enforcement officer who told me he failed to make arrests during the year or facilitate convictions, but he was really good to victims, and so he got promoted. It just doesn't happen. If departmental incentives don't change, then over time, law enforcement prosecutors are going to focus on arrests and prosecutions and convictions. So the efforts for a victim-centered approach are meaningful and they're thoughtful, but it's not going to work unless other entities are involved and there's a real shift in structural, departmental incentives and frameworks. Second, a criminal law approach just doesn't get at root causes. So it doesn't do anything to address why is it that certain individuals are more vulnerable than others. We know poverty plays a significant role, but not every poor person is trafficked. And often it's not the poorest of the poor who are trafficked. It's that sort of next tier up. And so there's some, it's poverty plus something else. And so better understanding risk factors is really important in a criminal law frameworks do nothing to achieve that. Third, or sort of the same on the demand side. Why is there a demand for cheap goods and services? Why is there a demand for sex? Criminal law just doesn't address that. Third, I would argue that criminal law falls short of its own goals in this context. So what does criminal law hope to achieve? Apprehend bad actors and prevent or deter others from doing the same. In 2011, we had a record year of global prosecutions. 4,200 and change, estimates suggest, you know, anywhere from tens of thousands to millions of victims annually. We're just not achieving that through criminal law. We're not going to prosecute our way out of the problem. So what can a public health approach do? Here's where I'm treading on old ground for many of you. But public health has a real role to play in helping us achieve an evidence-based approach to human trafficking work. There's very little evidence-based work in this field right now. And that's what we see. So we really have no idea whether we're doing something or doing something effective. We really can't distinguish. There are survivor programs. Some are 3 months, some are 6 months, some are 1 year. There's almost no monitoring and evaluation of that. So I think there's a real opportunity there. Second, prevention-centered approach. I think there's so much to be learned from public health work on this front. We wouldn't think ever to hold off on vaccinating the population and simply announce when people fall ill, we will find out who should be held accountable. And that's our approach right now with human trafficking. We're just waiting around and hoping to hold people accountable afterwards. Third, and here's where I think there's some real opportunities, is changing unhealthy or high-risk behaviors and attitudes. And I think there's a lot that can be drawn from public health work approaches to violence, but even anti-smoking campaigns. There's a lot that actually I think really could apply in the context of human trafficking. And then finally, fourth, identifying and engaging stakeholders. All that is sort of old news, I think, in the world of public health. In the human trafficking world, it's been largely law enforcement and social services. We're only realizing now that we need to talk to hospitals, which are presented a great opportunity for early interventions, because in the sex trafficking context, pimps will take kids to the hospital as a way of protecting their investment after they get beat up, or either after they beat them up, or a John does. So there's an opportunity there, and we're just learning that we need to take advantage of that. Schools, the same thing. Identifying sort of who really needs to be involved. The last thing I want to mention briefly is there's an additional value at sort of a public health lens on human trafficking, and that is, I think, we learn a lot about human trafficking. We could start in the public health context and say, what's the vector here? And I think if we start with that question, we start to learn a lot about human trafficking. I mean, if you convince someone not to smoke, a benefit accrues to them. If you convince someone not to seek out services in the commercial sex industry, no benefit accrues to them, right? If you can convince anyone in the room or beyond the room that maybe you shouldn't go for the $5 T-shirt, because somebody got exploited in the supply chain, paying more doesn't give you any benefit. So we've got to learn how can we convince individuals to be altruistic. And there's some interesting public health research on this front, and if others are doing it, I'd love to hear from you. People will be altruistic, but typically when there's some threat associated with the bad behavior, and the pathways to making a difference are clear. And that's a real challenge for human trafficking, right? Because if instead of going and getting that bargain basement T-shirt, we all decide we're going to pay $30 a T-shirt, I don't think any one of us has any greater confidence that that money went to people who were no longer exploited in the supply chain. So that's a real challenge for behavioral change in the human trafficking context. And I don't know that I necessarily have the answers, but I think we learn a lot from looking at it from a public health perspective. So given time, let me close with a couple of thoughts. This is a challenging problem that really requires involvement of multiple sectors and effective coordination. The one thing I think we've learned in the last decade is we simply won't prosecute our way out of this problem. A criminal law approach, we should have learned from the world of drug trafficking and drug use, that it's not going to work. And I think public health really has a lot to offer, so I'm hoping that afterwards we can continue conversations. I can hear about some of what you're doing and maybe think about how it might apply in the context of human trafficking. Thank you very much.